Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hi everybody, it's Kathy Frey here from Motherwise and welcome to another webinar or podcast. And today's topic is all about when it's around 3 weeks after having your baby and what is it that you should be aware of and knowing about by sort of around that day 20, 21 in that postpartum period with a term baby. So term baby means not a premature baby. Okay, so we've got a bit of a list that we're going to go through. And so firstly, we'll talk about you, then we'll talk about baby, and then we'll talk about infant sleep. So firstly, mum. By this stage, really, your breastfeeding should be starting to feel like it's successfully establishing. Your breasts are softening. They're feeling sort of less overly full now. Your nipples, sort of discomfort and pain in your nipples should be improving. And usually at around about 4 to 6 weeks is when things, the supply and demand magically kind of synchronize. It's really normal for that first month that you feel like you're overproducing milk. Not everybody does, but most women do during that time. And that's because, you know, on day one, your baby might drink about 30 mils in 24 hours. And 4 weeks later, your baby's drinking 1,000 mils in 24 hours. So your breasts do basically often oversupply until baby catches up, basically. So quite often, women at around 6 weeks or so feel like their milk supply is petering off, but actually, they're just not overproducing anymore. But as I say, around at 3 weeks, you should be just feeling like things are kind of getting in a good groove and they're working better. It's all functioning better as far as breastfeeding goes. If it's not, that's a really big flag that you should be speaking to a lactation consultant or a girlfriend who's breastfed 3 or 4 babies or your mother who's breastfed 6 babies or people who know what they're talking about, your local La Lash League, that's the other option, and of course midwives. So get some professional assistance if things are really just still not working properly by that stage. Your womb should be fully involuted well and truly, and hopefully a midwife will have had a feel of your tummy and made sure that she can no longer palpate your uterus within your abdomen and it, because it's now all tucked behind your pelvic bones. Your perineum or your C-section wound should really be, you know, healing very well by now, well and truly on the way to feeling good, and every day should be a bit more comfortable. And again, that's a red flag if it's not what's happening for you. If your wounds are just getting sorer or sorer, you're feeling more and more uncomfortable, then you need to seek a medical opinion because that's not normal. And certainly if it's a perineal, if you have discomfort from your perineum healing from an episiotomy and you have not been using Hypercal, which is, go back to previous webinars where I talk about that. If you have not been using that Hypericum calendula mix of cream, then get a tube of it because that is the best thing for fixing sore perineums. And I've spoken, so as I say, you've already heard all about that on previous webinars. Okay, this is also a time when it would be good for you to be knowing all about expressing breast milk and feeling confident about that, and all the different kind of pumps out there and how long you can store it where. But as a general kind of rule, now you will find these different opinions on this around the place, but I'm just going to give you a general overview. Basically, if the room temperature is under about 26 degrees, then you can have milk just covered sitting on the bench, breast milk for up to around 4 hours. It can sit in the back of your fridge for about 2 days, up to about 48 hours. It can be frozen in that little freezer box within a fridge for about 2 weeks, although that's a bit old-fashioned. You don't see so many of those these days. And then if it's in a freezer that's sort of a separate part of a fridge freezer, then generally up to around 3 months you can store it. And if it's in a real dedicated deep freeze, you know, with the big ones where you've got the great big lid that you lift up, you can be frozen there for up to around 6 months. And generally the recommendation is to thaw breast milk just in the fridge, and then once it's thawed, you would stand the container of it in warm water to bring it up to that body temperature, which is really what you're looking for. So when you're testing reheated milk to work out is it the correct temperature, we always, you'll see women sort of, you know, doing it on their wrist, and the reason is because your wrist is a very delicate skin in general, and so long as it feels neutral, so long as it doesn't feel hot and it doesn't feel cold on your delicate wrist skin, then it's the right temperature. So you're trying to get body temperature, which is the temperature that it comes out of your body when it comes out of your breasts. With regards to breast pumps, definitely hand expressing colostrum is the best thing at the beginning, you know, within the first few days. But once you're really, your full milk has arrived, certainly electric pumps are awesome. If you are going to be in a situation of you're returning to work and you want to be very efficient with your pumping, then I can't recommend highly enough getting a really good double pump. Medulla is a huge brand out there, and I gotta say their double pumps are just awesome, so I can't recommend them highly enough, and there's other great brands as well. Just a reminder, if you would have been due for a cervical pap smear during your pregnancy, which now makes you overdue for that cervical cancer check, then good idea to get booked in to have one at 6 weeks. That's the earliest you can have it, really. If you have a cervical pap smear under 6 weeks, then because your cervix is actually still returning to normal, the tissue within it, you can get a higher chance of getting a abnormal cellular sort of status on it, and it's really quite normal, you know, a 4 week post birth cervix. So in fact, I would even say push it through to two months and do it perhaps at 2 months, and you're just going to have a more accurate report on your cervical cells. Okay, so also if you know that you are not immune to rubella, you would not have been able to have a vaccine usually in your pregnancy, but it is something you might want to consider getting. I know there's loads of controversy out there on vaccinations, but just so you're aware, the reason that children are vaccinated for rubella is not to protect them, because rubella is not really that big a deal of a disease. Actually, it's pretty mild, to be honest. But the problem is if pregnant women get rubella, it is absolutely devastating to the pregnancy. So that's why children are vaccinated against rubella, to protect the pregnant woman within our communities. And so while you're in your childbearing years, it's something you might want to consider. And the other one you might want to consider is chickenpox. If you have not had chickenpox as a child, if you didn't get chickenpox during the pregnancy, which I do hope you didn't get, and this is speaking from someone who did get chickenpox in a pregnancy, I didn't actually realise I hadn't had it as a child, and I got chickenpox 20 weeks pregnant with my second child. Just not pretty, guys. Not good. Definitely affected the placenta. So that's another whole story. But chickenpox or varicella vaccines don't last that long. You're like about 5 years, depending on someone's own unique immune system. But it is something you might want to consider to get just while you're in those child rearing years, because having chickenpox when you're pregnant is pretty hideous. Chickenpox as an adult is bad, but chickenpox when you're pregnant adult is really awful. You can be pretty sick. And I got chickenpox from my two-year-old. Awesome. Anyway, what else? Vaccines. Okay, if you had gestational diabetes in pregnancy, then at around 6 weeks usually, it would be normal for you to have a GTT, a glucose tolerance test, redone, just to confirm that you are now no longer diabetic. So there are three kinds of diabetes in the world: type 1 that people are born with, type 2 that they get generally from lifestyle, and type 3, which is pregnancy diabetes. And when you've had pregnancy diabetes, it does make you statistically more vulnerable to getting type 2 diabetes. But generally speaking, it's a temporary form of diabetes, and usually that 6 week check very much usually will show that you don't have diabetes anymore. Okay, this is also a good time to be thinking about what contraception options you might be using. Now, I have often found that women, after having a baby, they often can become more resistant to using any kind of contraception that is hormone-based, which is interesting because they might have been on the pill for years, but after they have a baby, often they sort of, I'm not sure about having a hormone type of contraception, because of course any kind of hormone-based contraception basically works on tricking your body. So it tricks your body into believing it's pregnant, and that's why you don't ovulate. So some women aren't comfortable with their body thinking it's pregnant for years on end. Certainly the non-hormonal IUCD, or intrauterine contraceptive device, is one that's become pretty popular. It's just a little copper coil that sits in your cervix, and it means you still ovulate and you still menstruate. Everything functions as normal. But if there is an egg that's fertilized, it doesn't implant into the wall of the womb because there's something already in the womb. So that has one of the highest levels of protection, to be honest. And I tend to call it the BMW of contraceptions, because I heard years ago that BMW had the highest customer satisfaction rate of all car manufacturers. I'm not sure it does now, but it used to. IUCDs can be like that, that if somebody's going to have any problem with it, it'll happen in the first month. And otherwise, never happens. And then typically they don't only have to be replaced every 5 years or so, depending on which particular model. So that's an option. You have also got the ability to use breastfeeding as a pretty reliable form of contraception, so long as your baby is exclusively breastfed. So there's no formula involved at all. And it's fed at least 4 hourly during the day and up to 1 6-hourly space overnight. And so long as that's happening, most women do not ovulate. It's not guaranteed, but most women don't. And then what you'll find is that once you start feeding baby solids, once they get to 6 months of age, at that point is when, 2 months later, you're having your first period because the old system's all cracked up again and got going. Or, hey presto, you're pregnant again. If you were not using contraceptions, because obviously you were not exclusively breastfeeding, if you're feeding your baby solids. All right, what else on my little list? Think about you should have a fairly good knowledge of the community support that's out there, the different agencies and networks that exist, and different mummy groups and coffee groups and help centers and pop-in centers and library reading sessions and little baby gyms and all those sorts of things. So start to, become aware of what's out there, so that, because at this point, often partners are returning to work and whatnot, and suddenly life can become incredibly alone and lonely with your baby. And it should not be that way. That's not how we're supposed to raise babies. And so make sure that you know what's out there in your community and plug into it. Not necessarily straight away, but certainly somewhere within the next month, start to get plugged into that. Then the other thing I want to mention is that you should be feeling safe from family violence. Okay, that's a biggie, right? It's a whole little topic in itself. And it's not okay for a woman to be feeling unsafe, but a woman with a baby, really, really not okay. Because the chances of that baby getting damaged in the process is of somebody having anger management issues and not being able to cope with a crying baby. You don't ever want, as a mum, to think that you should have left somebody because you knew you were unsafe and then your baby was harmed. That mother guilt will never leave you. You don't go there, girlfriend. Don't go there, okay? Look after yourself and reach out, because there's lots of, fantastic, fantastic, amazing support structures for that. So you reach out. All right. Next topic, baby. All right, so somebody around this stage should be doing a detailed neonatal exam on your little wee one, and, making sure that their weight gain is really good and that there's good, you know, and that subsequently will show in great height, the baby's head circumference will be increasing, another check of the baby's reflexes, checking that there's no horrible nappy rash going on, and checking the umbilical cord stump that it's fallen off and healing beautifully. And they do get quite smelly before the stump falls off because it's rotting flesh, but there should be no red inflammation going on within the skin around where the umbilical cord was. You should feel confident that your baby is starting to get into some really good feeding patterns, basically, and not being a snack and snooze baby, which often they can be by default. That's what happens when every single cry that their baby has is responded to with a boob in its mouth. So a snack and snooze, short feed, short sleep, short feed, short sleep, short feed, short sleep. And usually if you have managed to create your own little snack and snooze, because yep, you've created that baby to do that. By default, it might have been using that wonderful popular parenting philosophy called winging it. And so yeah, we can help cure that. And you need to get a copy of my book, Get the O Baby, and get into that infant sleep chapter and have a really good read of my 12 golden rules, 12 magical secrets and 20 do's and don'ts. Now, I get more fan mail on that one chapter than any other chapter in my book. It summarizes it really well. It's not about doing one thing different. It's about doing 30 things this right, and they're not that complicated, and they all just make common sense when you think about the logic behind it. So when you read through those 12 golden rules, 12 magical secrets and 20 do's and don'ts, you'll probably find that nearly all of it you're doing great, but there's just a few little key things that if you just change what you're doing, hey presto, voila, you've got a great sleeping baby. Okay, other things to do with baby. I'm going to come back to the sleep again in this little webinar too. But just other things I just want to tick off is that also around this time or earlier than this, baby should have probably normally had a hearing screen or be booked to have a hearing screen. So different countries have different things that are included in the process, but that would be pretty normal. And if there was tuberculosis in your family, or if your baby's getting exposed to tuberculosis, then a BCG vaccine would be pretty normal. And in fact, you really should be feeling like you're getting very informed about the whole vaccine debate. Now, it's funny because the numbers of unvaccinated children used to really relate to lower demographic, and now it's the pendulum is shifting and it's relating to higher demographic, because women like yourself are out there researching information and making the decision for them and for their baby that they feel that the best and safest thing is not to vaccinate. Now, I'm not going to give you an opinion on this one. Sorry, I'm not. But what I do recommend you do is to read my section within my book to do with vaccinations, because I was like you. I was in your shoes going, should I do this? Should I not do this? And to be honest, not feeling really fully informed on it at the time. That was, my kids were little before I was a midwife. But what you've got out there today is you've got some really terrible information and easy access to it. You've got very anti-vaccination lobbies that have got sometimes some really real propaganda, to be honest, which is not based on good science, or it's spouting stuff that's really old information and not relevant to current technology on vaccines. But then, you know, vaccines are money makers, and I'm the first to support the fact that big pharmaceutical is, there's too much money involved with medicine to not say that there's no corruption. So I'm more interested about the science. I want to know the science on vaccines. So that's what's in my book. So read that and feel a little bit more informed. So the last thing I want to do is just give you another little overview to do with infant sleep. Okay, now as a real quick summary, what amount of sleep is normal? Okay, so when the baby is 1 to 3 weeks of age, they should be sleeping usually around about 16 to 20 hours in every 24 hours. And that will be broken up into about 6 to 8 sleeps of around 2 to 3 hours. That's normal. Okay, so when the baby is around 4 to 6 weeks of age, they again shall still be sleeping around 16 to 20 hours every 24 hours. But one of those sleeps will typically be a slightly longer sleep of around 5 to 6 hours overnight. Say, for example, from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. That's pretty normal. And then at around 2 to 3 months of age, then it is absolutely normal for infant sleep to be around 15 to 18 hours every 24 hours, with about half of that occurring overnight. So it might be sort of 7 to 8 hours overnight by the time they're 7 to 9 weeks of age, or it might be around 9 to 11 hours at night by the time they are around 3 to 4 months of age, with the rest of the hours typically divided up into about 3 day sleeps, somewhere of say 1.5 to 3 hours each. So that sort of gives you a bit of an overview for the until they're sort of around 2 to 3 months, what you should expect. So the last thing I'm going to do today is read you a little section in my book, because this is one of all the things that written in this book, I would have to say it's the one I've got the most fan mail on, and it's called A Voice of a Baby If Only He Could Talk, and it's all talking about infant sleep. So I'm just going to read it to you, and I want you to just close your eyes and imagine you're your baby. When I was in mummy's tummy, I could sleep anytime I wanted to. It was always dark and warm and safe and cozy. Mummy's heartbeat was so soothing and her movement lulled me to sleep. In fact, when she lay down really still at night, then that would often wake me up. But now that I've arrived, it's so frustrating. I try so hard to tell Mummy when I'm tired and need to go to bed. I screw up my face, I whine and grizzle, I clench my fists and make jerky movements. That's all I'm able to do so far. And what does she do? She tries to feed me another drink, or worse, shows me an interesting toy. Yeah, I know, both are kind of good for a little while. But by then, I'm really tired. Finally, after I've been waiting for ages, crying and getting annoyed, Mummy works out that I must be tired. Phew! I've been trying to tell her for over an hour now. It's like she can't hear me. But now I'm so overtired and overstimulated, it's hard for me to relax. So once in bed, I like to cry for a while. It's soothing for me because I can shut everything out and it makes my body produce relaxing hormones so I can calm down. But heck, Mummy won't let me do that on my own. She's in and out and in and out of my bedroom, rocking me, patting me. Oh, just give me some peace, please. But not too quiet, thanks. Some vacuuming or a radio or some other humdrum sound is great. Background noise lets me zone out. I've grown up with lots of noise in Mummy's tummy, you see. Another thing that bothers me is that I'd really like to be wrapped up for my sleeps, nice and tight, so I can feel cozy like I used to be inside Mummy's tummy. But my mummy doesn't do that, so I end up sprawled out on my back with my arms up high. It's awful. And I don't even know how to make my arms come back down. And doesn't she know that I still can't control my startle reflex yet? So my arms and leg end up accidentally waking me, or worse, my fingernails scratch my face. It's so annoying. I hate it when that happens. It makes me cry. Then she comes in and gets me up. But once again, I haven't even finished sleeping. I feel so tired nearly all the time, and that makes me cranky. It's just so frustrating. All I can do is cry. Quite often I wake up after I've been sleeping for not even an hour. I can't help it. It just happens. My brain is still learning how to stay asleep for longer. But when Mummy thinks I've finished my rest, and I haven't, I need to go back to sleep. That's why I'm crying, so I can go back to sleep again. But oh no, Here she comes. She's going to get me out of bed again. Oh, heck. Oh, no. More food again. So maybe that's you. Look, I'm going to love you and leave you and wish you a wonderful rest of your week. Bye, everybody. See you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit kathyfrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. kathyfrey.com.